الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، نحمده ونسبحه ونقدسه على آلائه ونعمائه، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، إلها واحدا أحدا فردا صمدا حيا قيوما، نؤمن له بالربوبية ونقر له بالعبودية. من يهدي الله فهو المهتدي، ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا. ونشهد أن سيدنا محمدا عبده ورسوله، أرسله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون. اللهم صلي وسلم وزد وبارك وترحم على محمد وآل محمد، كما صليت وسلمت وباركت وترحمت على إبراهيم وآل إبراهيم في العالمين، إنك حميد مجيد. وصل اللهم وسلم على جميع الأنبياء والمرسلين والشهداء والصالحين وعترة نبيك الطاهرين. قال الله في كتابه الحكيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، قل لن يصيبنا إلا ما كتب الله لنا هو مولانا وعلى الله فليتوكل المؤمنون. صدق الله العلي العظيم، وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد. In the 9th century of the Common Era, an inquisition took place in the Islamic Empire. Similar to the Christian inquisitions which later on took place in Europe in the 12th century, the crux, the question at the heart of the Islamic inquisition rotated around the nature of the Quran. And the question was the Quran the created word of God, or is it eternal? Is it makhluq, created, or is it azali, eternal? And at that time, the Inquisition, which was spearheaded by the Caliph at the time, Al-Ma'mun al-Abbasi, it began in the year 833 and ended in the year 848. So about 15 years. This inquisition took place. And the stance that he had taken at that time was the stance of the Mu'tazili theological school, which was that the Quran was created. What does that mean? That means that it came after God, versus the stance that the Quran is eternal, meaning that it has existed eternally. So since the beginning of time. Now, what that meant was that the leader at the time, the political leader, and considered the religious leader by many, had the power to inquire into personal matters of faith. And the Quran tells us the following. One of the verses that's used in that discussion of whether the Quran is eternal or not is this, in chapter 9, verse 51. قُلْ لَنْ يُصِيبَنَا إِلَّا مَا كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَنَا. Say, the Quran says, that say that nothing befalls us, meaning that nothing happens to us, except that which God has written, meaning that which God has decreed. And what this verse implies is that before everything happens, so whatever happens in your life, whatever happens in this world, before it happens, this verse implies that it's been written somewhere. It's been decreed somewhere. And that place which it has been written and decreed is what is known as al-lawh al-mahfuz, the preserved tablet, the place where everything is written and decreed before it comes into happening in this world. So based on that, there's this idea that there's this eternal piece of writing that exists. And within that eternal piece of writing, everything is decreed before it happens in this world. Now, I don't want to focus on this from a theological perspective and what that means theologically. I want to look at this from more of a psychological and a social perspective. Because one of the questions that comes to pass in people's minds is, why is this happening to me? When something happens in their life, why is this happening to me? Or is it decreed and is it written that I go through these tribulations, that I go through sadness, or I go through torture, or I experience loneliness? And if it's written and decreed, then there's really nothing that I can do about it. There's nothing in my power to change. It's a centuries-old question of destiny and fate. Now, when you look at it from a psychological perspective, there's the idea of two mindsets that one can have. And there's a dichotomy between these two mindsets. There's what is called the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And there are sets of studies that were conducted in this field, and the ones that became more popular were written by Carol Dweck, who is a Stanford professor and psychologist. And she wrote a book in 2006 called Mindset, The Psychology Behind Success. And within that book, she talks about a number of studies that proves that describe how some people have a sort of fixed mindset, meaning that they believe that you're either meant to understand something or you're not meant to understand it. That you are meant to succeed or you're not meant to succeed. That you're meant to be good at math, for instance, or you're not meant to be good at math. It's a fixed mindset. It's either this or that. Versus the growth mindset, which shows that you can actually become good at something. You can become proficient at something. You can become better and you can change. So one of the interesting studies that's mentioned here concerns a high school in Chicago. And this high school, instead of following the traditional grading method of pass or fail and assigning a grade, the way that they would have students pass is either giving them a now, meaning that you're ready now, or a not yet grade. And the idea behind that is when they receive a not yet grade, it's different than when they receive a failing grade. Because when you receive a failing grade, you think, khalas, that's it. There's no room for progression. I'm not good at this, so I'm not even going to try. Whereas when you receive a not yet grade, what it tells the students is that you're not prepared yet, you need to go back to the books and you need to do better. And that you can change. And that there's a learning curve. So psychologically, it's a completely different mindset. Now, these studies were carried out and the results started to be implemented in different places across the world. It wasn't just in Chicago, but they did studies in New York, they did studies in Washington State, and everywhere that they applied the growth mindset when it came to studying and advancement with children, they realized that children got better grades. And they eventually passed, because they learned that they had to actually get good at something. Now, a number of other studies show that how significant this is and how it reveals itself in the human brain. So they took a group, in one study, they took a group of children, 10 years old, and they gave them problems that were just hard enough that it would challenge them. And they actually studied, and they you know, I guess they hooked them up to devices to see how their brains would respond to these challenges. And the ones that had a fixed mindset, meaning the ones that would stop and basically give up and not try to solve the problem, when they scanned their brains, they realized nothing was going on. Nothing was happening in the brain. Whereas the children who had the growth mindset, who when they would see a challenge, they would see this as an opportunity to learn and get better and grow, their brains were on fire. They were continuing. Now they went to the fixed mindset children, and they asked them, they said, well, what are you going to do next time? Some of them said that we're going to cheat. In order to get better next time, we're going to cheat, because they didn't really see a way of improving themselves except through cheating. Others compared themselves with other students that weren't doing as well as them. And that reveals certain things about the fixed mindset, that you see something in a way where there's no room for improvement. So, you know, you think about the example that children are taught in school, in science class, about the life cycle, about how caterpillars can turn into butterflies. And what does a caterpillar do in order to turn into a butterfly? It nestles itself into a cocoon, and it needs to stay there for, you know, 1, 2, or 3 weeks. Well, I clearly remember this actually in the second grade, watching this happening and looking at the little cocoon and thinking to myself after 20 minutes, can we help the little guy out? Is there anything that I can do to speed up this process of it turning into a butterfly? And if you actually do that, and if you intervene and you slip the thing open, what falls out? It's not a butterfly. It's something that doesn't look like a caterpillar and not a butterfly. It's something in between. Something certainly not as pretty as a butterfly. And so sometimes that happens when we have the now mindset. I want to see it right now. I want to see the results happen right now, versus the not yet mindset, where you have to work on it and improve in order for it to grow to its full potential. So one of the things that Carol Dweck talks about is, so how do you foster that mindset? You're not born with either a fixed mindset or a growth. It's something that you acquire from the outside world. See, one question that we need to ask ourselves, especially going into the, you know, people talk about this not just being a new year, but it's also a new decade. So not just looking at the next year, but looking at the next 10 years, is to evaluate where your mindset comes from and where your thought process comes from. See, we walk around as judgmental, skeptical human beings. We're skeptical of everything, and we're judgmental of the outside world. And normally the last thing on our list of things to be judgmental about is our own judgments. You know, people today there's a growing trend among people to, you know, they do the ancestry and 27andMe or whatever it's called, right? To see where their heritage comes from. You wanna know where 150,000 years ago where your ancestors came from. Sometimes we need to do an ancestry test on our mindset and our thought process and ask ourselves, where do these ideas and values that I have in my mind, where did they come from? Where did they originate from? And most of the time, it's your environment and your parents and people with good intentions who've typed it into the computer that's stored in your brain. So asking ourselves where our mindset and where our thought process comes from. So how do you implement the growth mindset in children? Well, there's a couple of ways. One way is to give emphasis on the process. What do I mean by that? See, when you come across a situation, there's an answer, right? There's a result, there's a solution. And everybody's looking for the answer, the result, the solution. And more emphasis is placed on the end result rather than the process. How did you actually get there? How did you actually acquire it? See, within modern thought, for most of our modern history, I would say, there was a lot of emphasis placed on intelligence, what we call IQ. Your IQ determines your position in society. If you have a higher IQ, you're considered better or of greater value in society. And one of the first people to challenge that was a man by the name of Howard Gardner in the 80s. He wrote a book called Frames of Mind, and it was about the theory of multiple intelligences. There's not just one sort of intelligence, which is IQ. There's EQ, which is emotional intelligence. There's social intelligence. There's musical intelligence. So different types of intelligences. And then, of course, books were written about emotional intelligence and how there are different types of intelligences. And so within that framework and within that process, now studies show that there's more of an emphasis that should be placed on the process that gets you to the answer rather than the answer itself. I remember when I was growing up in school and I was learning math, which was not my strong suit and is still not my strong suit, but I had a teacher who now when I look back in retrospect, I realize the wisdom of this teacher, because when he would grade our homework, he would grade our homework every day. He would look at the problems that we would solve on paper. And if the problem was worth, answering the problem was worth 10 points, 1 point was given to the answer and 9 points was given to reasoning. How did you get the result? So sometimes you'd show the correct reasoning, but then in the end, you would write down the wrong number. You would still get a passing grade because it was the reasoning that was important. So within that, there's a narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam, which says the following, where he describes what the aql is. You know, in Islam, there's a heavy emphasis on the aql, the intellect. He says the intellect is what arrives at what is correct through reasoning. There's a process of reasoning. In another narration, he says, use your intellect to understand something when you hear about it. The intellect that examines, that is, and not just the intellect that repeats what it hears. Many people, they're considered people of intellect, but in reality, they just repeat what they hear. For surely there are many who repeat the knowledge that they hear, and there are few that examine it. Examining your thought process, examining your reasoning. So this is one way. Another way how to strengthen children with that growth mindset is what they realize is when you actually empower young people in that way, when you empower children in that way and you tell them and you praise their reasoning and their thought process, it begins to build neurons in the brain, which actually strengthen the brain and further its ability to continue reasoning and a thought process. And the brain is very marvelous. You know, before scientists used to say that by the age of 25, the brain doesn't grow anymore. But recent studies show that the brain can actually create new neurological pathways. They call it neuroplasticity. So even beyond the age of 25, you can actually grow the brain and you can fix the brain. So the message is that when it comes to your mindset and the way that you believe, you can actually change. Most people go around the world and say, oh, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, people that they come across, oh, this person's never going to change. Or even about themselves, oh, I'm never going to change. This is just the way I am. No, the reality is that you can change. It's just a matter of perspective. And as you change, you get better at problem solving. So this is from a psychological point of view. From a social point of view, and I want to talk, because of our limited time, just about one example. And the example is that of relationships, specifically romantic relationships. Because a number of studies have been done on the idea of growth versus destiny. What does that mean? So destiny, it reflects that fixed mindset. It reflects the mindset that this relationship is either meant to be or it's not meant to be. Versus the growth mindset, which says that you make the decision, you don't make a right decision. You make the decision and then you make it right. And there's, of course, a lot to unpack there. So the idea is that there are pros and cons to both ways of thinking. And some of the, when it comes to the destiny mindset, that this relationship, this romantic relationship, is either meant to be or it's not meant to be. One of the downsides is that what we begin to think is that that whenever we see a sign, a warning sign, the first thing that we think about is jumping ship and aborting. And what tends to happen is that when you run away from challenges and overcoming challenges, you never truly build character and personal integrity. See, most people, they don't give themselves the chance to build character because they've never actually gone through trials and tribulations and fought against those obstacles in order to strengthen themselves. And one of the challenges that we have in today's world, especially when it comes to relationships and specifically romantic relationships, is that we live in an age of abundance. So people have choice. And when people have choice, psychologically, they think to themselves that if I don't like a certain situation, I'm out of there. I don't have to continue because I have choices. Whereas there was a time where when it came to relationships, especially romantic relationships, you know, you married the person from down the street. There wasn't a whole lot of choice. You weren't connected to people on the other side of the world. So you made a decision, and then you made the decision right instead of looking for the right decision to make. And that's where a lot of people get caught in this conundrum of, am I making the right decision or am I not making the right decision? You know, there's for the movie buffs out there, there's a part of the movie, The Matrix, where Neo finally meets the architect of The Matrix. And they have this conversation, and he realizes that, you know, after the Oracle reveals to him that he's the chosen one, he realizes that, no, he's not really that special, because there have been multiple versions of The Matrix before. And what the architect tells him is that you live in a world of abundance. See, when they live in The Matrix, they live in abundance. They could do whatever they want. They could eat whatever food they want. They could fly. They could travel. They could do whatever they want. They have choice. But there comes a point where Neo finally makes a very important realization. He says the problem is the problem of choice. Having choice in itself sometimes is a problem, because you have so much abundance that you don't stick to anything anymore. And that's an illusion. You think to yourself, well, if I don't like something, then it's simply not meant to be, and I can move on to the next thing. Rather than going into a relationship with the mindset that, look, maybe not everything is perfect in this situation, but I'm going to make it a great situation. And that's how you build character, when you stick it out. There was a religious leader who in the United States who actually wrote about this, and he was talking about how damaging divorce can be in families, especially where children are involved. And this was his personal opinion, and he made a pretty solid point in this special case. He says, sometimes I have people come up to me, a parent, you know, a mother, a concerned mother, or a concerned father. He says, you know, they come up to me and they say, I'm thinking of walking away from my spouse. I'm thinking of walking away from my partner. Now, obviously, if there's abuse taking place, if it's a toxic relationship, that's a different story. But what he was talking about is, you know, people sometimes come to religious leaders for petty reasons, and they want to break up a marriage. That happens. We see this really on a regular basis. He says, even though you might suffer for a little bit, but in the long run, it's actually good for you. Because number one, you are going to build character by sticking it out. And number two, you are going to teach your children and the people that are watching you a very valuable lesson. That when you don't get your way in this world, you don't just pick up your marbles and leave. You don't just pick up your marbles and walk away. That you stick it out. You learn to communicate. You learn to work. You learn to build something. You learn to grow with someone through all of the trials and all of the tribulations. That's how you build character. Not just by taking your marbles and walking away. So there's a number of ways that this growth mindset versus the fixed mindset manifests itself. Now, going back to that question, is people think to themselves, what am I really in control of? What is it in my life that I am really in control of that I can actually change? And what is it that will not change? Now, I just want to make a very quick point here. When we talk about being good at something or being competent at something, we talk about two things, skill and talent. Skill and talent are two different things. Talent is something that you're naturally born with. Some people, they're naturally born, you know, they're natural athletes, for instance. They're very good at sports, whatever sport you put them in, soccer, basketball, baseball, football, they're really good at it. Some people, you know, naturally, they're talented and they have a good singing voice, for instance. So talent is something that happens naturally, whereas skill is something, a proficiency that you build over time and through the process of repetition. And sometimes you find people who are skilled, who are preferred over people who are talented. Because when you work at something, when you build something, you build what in Arabic we call a malaka, an ability. And when you build an ability to go through something, which happens through hard work, you're always better off than the person who is naturally talented. Normally people who are naturally talented see themselves as not really having to work hard, thus they don't really have to achieve anything. So when it comes to our lives and moving forward, and this is the message that I want to leave you with in this part of the sermon, is The idea that at no matter what age we are, no matter what position we are in life, there's always room for improvement. We can always grow. You know, people talk about new year, new me. What does that mean, new year, new me? I mean, is there something special about January 1st? Does something spiritual happen on January 1st? Now, whether you celebrate the new year on January 1st or on, you know, March 21st, that's irrelevant. There's nothing that happens spiritually to you or mentally or physically to you based on an arbitrary date on the calendar. The secret is in your day-to-day habits. So it's not new year, new me, it's new habits, new me. And most people, because they haven't changed their mindset on their habits and how they can grow through their habits, they remain the same person year after year, month after month, decade after decade, and century after century if they make it to the next century. So as we move forward within this year and within this decade, let us spend some time in reflection thinking about our habits. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to grow through our habits. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to grow through our character, through our struggles. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wal asri innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu wa amilu salihat. Wa tawasaw bil haqqi wa tawasaw bil sabr. Wa sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.